times I listen to this podcast and you guys ask a question and I'm like, it's this. It's this. And you guys are like, I don't know. And I'm like, it's this. It's this.
And we never find out. Welcome to Tunnel Talk, a No Facts, All Feelings Wrestling podcast. I'm Allie.
I'm Leah.
And I'm Sarah.
Sarah, welcome back to the pod.
Hi, you guys.
We are so excited to have you. Ann is traveling this week. We're going to have actually quite a few substitute co-hosts over the course of August because of travel. It's just the first of many. But we're so all, excited.
We're all back next week, but then I'm missing my very first pod.
Yeah, wow, that's going to be huge.
It's going to be
for,
really big.
For me, because you can't hold that over my head anymore.
But you know what? I know that the messages are going to rush in that are like, wasn't the same.
Okay, well, listeners, you can feel free to say it wasn't the same, but just be nice to the remaining host, because we like it when you're nice to us. So
it did sound like you said remaining hoes.
We're going to be skanking it up the best we can, so just be nice to us. We're doing our best. Sarah, because you are our guest, I believe we told you we are doing a little summer initiative where every week somebody says something that's making them happy. We put that burden on your shoulders this week. Are you ready to get us happy?
I am ready. So there's a couple things making me happy this week, but I will say the one that is the most is my friend Blaine, who is also a friend of the podcast.
True.
Love you, Blaine.
Shout out to Bea.
She did our graphic.
Sorry. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. She did our beautiful Tunnel Talk art.
She is having so much fun with this Adam Cole MJF thing, and she is loving it so much. And every time, she posts about it or tweets about it or DMs me about it, she is the happiest person in the entire world. And it's so infectious to me that I'm just like, yes, look at Roderick Strong.
Look at Roderick Strong.
It's just, I don't know, just watching someone else enjoy something is such a wonderful thing, and she enjoys things just so, like, unreservedly that it's just, like, it's hyping up my levels to such a degree on something I'm already having such a good time with. So thank you, Bea, for just being awesome.
Yeah.
That is such a delightful thing to be making you happy, and it makes me happy vicariously as well, because I also just love to watch somebody having fun. And we're going to have to keep that in mind when we circle back to talk about that storyline later, because we're going to be talking about some of the different reactions that it has gotten in different quarters of the IWC. Another thing that's making all of us very happy this week, we're starting by talking about the Elite, who signed new multi-year contracts with AEW. They are not going anywhere.
I would have to say that waking up to that kind of news was an experience that has beat the cold shower. Like, wow. The
dopamine
that I experienced all day. Wow. I couldn't believe it.
For it to be basically the first thing I saw upon waking up, I did feel like everything that happened this week, I was like, they heard our podcast and they thought, those women aren't doing well. We have to give them something. So this was announced on, it was Wednesday morning?
Yes, yeah. 9 a.m.
9 a.m. Wednesday morning. Oh, for you. I was like, I get up before 9 for you. 9 a.m. Wednesday morning, the day of the 200th episode of Dynamite. And we just got to cruise through. I was already, you know, I was excited for the anniversary or 200th episode, but we got to cruise through the day feeling good.
Joyful.
Yeah, feeling joyful.
It was, I had said this, but I was like, oh, I'll be fine. You know, I'm totally chill. Whatever they decide to do, they're adults. This is a hobby. I don't care. And then I saw the tweet and read the article and I was like, oh, I was lying to myself. I do care.
But you were doing the kind of lying we all have to do to be like, I'm maintaining mental health. Like, I know that I'm not going to be happy if that happens, but I'm going to have to cope with it. So I got to start coping with it now. It feels really good to not be coping with things that might happen anymore.
Yeah.
And to just be like, they're definitely here. So whatever happens, they're here.
Yeah. And I've been acting so superior to Leah. Because I've been like, I'm not that emotional about this. I don't really mind. And then the news hit and I was like, oh, I do care and I am an asshole.
Does this feel good, Leah?
It was very satisfying because she and I had a heart-to-heart like this weekend, I think, where she was like, you know, I'm able to have like an emotional reserve where the bad things are funny and the good things are good. And like, you know, you just need to like, you know, just find that. And I was like, you're so right. I do need to find that. And then like... the level of hysteria where she was like, they've signed! And I was like, this is relatable.
Full of shit.
Sarah, do you want to be our special correspondent and tell us what we know about these contracts?
So, obviously, as everybody's been reporting, they've been negotiating for a long time now, obviously. I think the Tony Khan's goal is to lock down in long-term deals the people that he wants to lock down. He re-signed Jericho long before his contract came up, same with Moxley. Dave Meltzer used Roosh as an example today, that he locked Roosh down. And I think the belief is that there is a big money TV deal coming. And there's some arguments in, you know, whether that's already been signed, is it still out there? But Meltzer was very funny about this today because he kind of almost gave up the bag, which is that WWE cannot legally or according to contracts negotiate with the Elite, but he kind of pretty much said that they sort of had, like, the Elite understood what the offer was going to be from WWE. So and they got big money was what he said, and I've heard like a bunch of figures. I don't know how any accuracy is. It seemed like in the realm of like 3 to 5 million each for per year.
Good for them. And that's why Matt Jackson was walking up the ramp turning to the camera saying, and I'm a very wealthy man too. And I said, my God, you are for the girlies.
For the girlies. And they want to keep the length of time on the deal secret. But one of the points that Brian and Dave brought up this morning that was actually pretty smart of them was Hangman last night said, here's to another 200 episodes. And the one number that people had heard was 4 years. And 200 episodes would be 4 years. So that does sort of suggest something. So, but as a group, they had made an agreement to stay together. They apparently had voted about it and continued to vote about it throughout the process, and they were going where the majority was going, which in my mind I'm kind of like, how would that have worked? Like, if I'm Kenny and I'm like, I hate everything about this and I'm miserable, but I guess I'll stick around because you guys want to, like, I don't think it was quite that like firm.
I know, but what I'm picturing is that they're sitting in someone's living room and they're all sitting like on the floor, crisscross applesauce, and somebody is like, okay, all in favor of Tony's latest deal, and then they all raise their hands.
I really liked hearing this because I'm a sap and I'm just like, they're real friends and they really care about each other as professionals and as people. And to me, the fact that they were like, we're going to stick together, one, they know that that's a way to get money, basically. Yeah. I mean, like, as a block, they have more power than any one of them alone, probably. But also, I was like, that just says to me that you're like, I really prioritize getting to wrestle with you and getting to do the work that we do together. So if we can find a way, like, we want to find a way to make it work together. And that I just imagine that they did talk out, like, okay, well, what do we have to do to make it work here? Like, what would we need to get to make it an okay situation? And I like thinking about people, the Elite, inventing the concept of democracy with each other. And unions, yes.
The big thing going around is a lot of folks being like, well, of course they were going to resign. But, you know, everybody who knows anything about the topic has made it clear that this was a thought out decision, that it went back and forth several times, that there were times where it seemed like they were going to be leaning more towards leaving and leaning, you know. So for me, at least, the idea that this was something that is thought out and considered, and that there's likely contract language that offers them protections on things that maybe they do or don't want to do or what have you. You know, I'm kind of like, you know, they're walking into the situation with their eyes wide open. Nobody's surprising them on anything. And that to me is like, great. Whatever they do moving forward, great.
Yeah. That's definitely the thing that I feel probably, I mean, next to that they're going to be here, that's the thing I feel best about, is that it didn't feel good before to be like, are they having to do stuff they don't want to do? Or like, are they having to consider like, well, we will do this just because of such and such. It feels good to be like, okay, so they did deals. So if something was a real, like, if, you know, break the bank, like it's probably in there. So yeah. You feel like they should be pretty happy, hopefully.
And we've seen this, like we've seen people re-sign and get pushes, basically. Ricky Starks, mm-hmm. FTR, you know, we've seen people like they re-sign a contract, Moxley.
And those pushes are going really well, I have to say. You know, we'll get into it because we have a big collision segment most weeks, but Ricky and FTR, just loving it every single week. They are knocking it out of the park.
But, you know, this is part of what happens. You re-sign for a bunch of money and they don't. You know, I guess the way I would think about it, if they are, and I have no idea if this figure is accurate, but if you're paying Hangman $3 million a year, he's not going to get buried in the mid-card.
Yeah.
He's not going to get pushed. He's not going to get, you know, yeah. You know, he is your 32-year-old who says he wants to be there forever and wants to be the face of your company forever. He's going to get a fucking singles match at some point. Sorry for the cursing.
Oh, we curse a lot, I think. Yeah, I kind of blank out
really
while we're recording.
Into degeneration.
Degeneration X.
We say all kinds of stuff on this podcast now. I'm so happy. I like the Elite. Did you guys know that? I really like
it them. It feels good to be happy and to like what's happening. Anybody talked about that? That it feels good that you when you experience happiness, your whole body and your heart and your mind feel good.
I've never heard anyone bring it up, but I like what you're saying. Do you guys want to talk about what the Elite actually did on Dynamite this week?
Yeah.
Sure. We can. So to celebrate their recommitment to AEW, they had a little fun and games match for silly guys with Jay Lethal, Jeff Jarrett, and Satnam Singh. This was probably the first time that I've watched an Elite match in a long time and just had like no concerns of like, what if this is the last time I ever see them wrestle? Like, not that that was going to happen, but you know, it felt, and it was the perfect match for that, I think, because it was just
so
like
too.
Goof
because
City.
A match like this, like, don't you think, like, a lot of, like, the discourse would be like, oh, you know, they're not getting a new feud because Tony's not sure that he's going to keep them, so he's not putting them in a new, oh, it's a bad sign that they're fighting this, and this means this, and I'm reading the tea leaves, and now it's like, no, they just wanted to have a little fun.
They just wanted to have a fun little match for the 200th Dynamite, and it was a blast. It rocked.
I decided that I'm going to like Lethal and Jared now, instead of Sam. They're my friends.
Full time. You're going to like them full time.
Not, I mean, they are not sons, but like,
no.
They're neighborhood boys that they can play in the yard. They won't be invited in the house, but they're allowed to play in the yard.
I like they used to be banned from the yard. It used to be like, if you want to play with those kids, you can go down by the creek or something. But they're not coming in my beautiful yard. And now you're like, fine. I know they're going to stomp all over my garden beds, but okay. But not in the house. That's where you draw the line.
No, not in the house yet. They don't have house privileges.
And then after the match, so the Elite won. They did beat Jeff Jarrett, Jay Lethal, and Satnam Singh. You'll be shocked to hear.
They lost their 200th episode re-signing match to Jeff Jarrett. I genuinely would have been like, what are we doing here?
I know. It's like Tony just sunk like 16 to 20 mil into this group, and it's like they couldn't pull out the win. Funny. Hangman did come out for the save at one point. So they're all out there. Kenny got a live mic and said, this was so funny to me that he was like, Hanger, you got something on your mind? You want to talk? And Hangman's vibe was like, not really.
Like, he looked really reluctant.
He looked like he was like, I don't know if I'm allowed to have that. And Kenny was like, if I give you a mic, you're allowed to have it, buddy. You think that's what it was?
Oh, hey,
that's
definitely
what his vibe was.
It very much like, when the Elite were allowed to speak in ring was a thing that I was aggressively tracking.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, and was something that was pinging to me in terms of like happiness, unhappiness. And the fact that they were not getting, and to their credit, very few people in the company get in-ring promo time anymore, or at least before last night, I have to say. So for me, it's one of those, it was basically MJF and like, that's it. So, and Jericho.
Tony freaked out and shut it down. He was just like, no one
nobody,
is talking
nobody,
anymore.
Nobody like, I feel like Kenny went there and was like, I'm not allowed to talk in the ring anymore. And Tony's like, well, nobody is.
Yeah. Because Kenny, a couple times.
Nobody can complain.
to be honest, even this time, I went back and watched it a couple times because I was like, is Kenny supposed to get that mic? And I think he was. He was allowed to have it.
Yes.
But the energy was still, like, as it has been a couple times, that Kenny stole the mic and was like, I can't be tamed. And it's funny because it's like, Kenny never says anything that, like, out of pocket. Like, he makes, like, one little, as, you know, he made his one little collision snark. But, like, Kenny's not going crazy, but he is like, but you must let me speak. If Kenny wants to speak, he must speak.
He must speak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was definitely, I think they expected that Kenny was going to do the talking, and I think Hangman did not expect Kenny to hand him the microphone and then was like, all right, fuck it, I'll go for it. Like,
but the little side eye he gave Kenny where he was like, like, I felt like his face was very like, really? Are you doing this to me right now?
Very married.
And then he did say something, and Kenny kind of backseat drove where he was like, well, that wasn't what I wanted you to say.
So it was exactly what I needed you to say. I'll say something else. Yeah.
I know. He was like, I wanted you to go a little harder, Hangman. And Hangman was like, I was playing it safe because I'm not usually allowed to talk anymore. it was really nice. The crowd seemed really happy. Big pop. Energy was good. Do you want to talk about this question of what everyone's going to be doing at All In?
Yes, I think Sarah 100% should, because this is a conversation we had last night where she told me all of her theories, and some of them were good and some of them enraged me. So,
okay, great. Well, hit us with them, Sarah. I'd love to feel a lot of different things.
I think Omega is clearly fighting Takeshita. Like, that's
that is good.
No-brainer. Yeah. I'm expecting that.
Great.
There was some talk of a trios match for the Hung Bucks, which I had heard an opponent, which I'm not going to spoil it here, but I don't think anybody here would be unhappy about it. Okay. And then there's some now discussion that the Bucks are potentially going to fight FTR, which...
For the interesting, listeners, Allie turned her entire body to face the rest of the room.
No, I'm enticed. Tell me more.
But this to me, and I have to say, this came from Rich Latta and James Boyd at One Nation Radio, which is a great podcast. Great podcast if you ever have time to listen. It is a longer podcast, but they do the timestamps, so I really recommend it. But James brought up the point that if this is the case, then the Bucks may have just done a master chess stroke for FTR, because you're essentially going to FTR and saying, okay, you want the match, we'll give it to you, and it's just us in a tag. Punk's not involved. And so you separated out Punk from FTR. You don't have to worry about that whole CMFTR bullshit. And it's like, we'll put you over, not a problem, and it's done. Like, we don't have to talk about it anymore. We don't have to discuss it anymore. There's no more conversation about it. You're not going to politic for it. Mm-hmm. Well, have a nice time with your tag titles. Enjoy. Right? And let's be realistic. You know, for all that FTR and Dax, God help him, is such a freaking loudmouth, they're a good tag team. And a Bucks-FTR tag match will be a great match. A phenomenal match, regardless of who wins. Like, regardless of who wins, that is a match to me that is worthy of Wembley Stadium.
And I particularly liked when she was like, when last night you were saying that, like, it's going to piss Punk off. Because, like, if they get a good match and, like, it's, like, it's well-received, FTR has nothing else to complain about. And, honestly, Dax will have gotten what he wanted, so he'll be happy.
But Dax will find something to complain about. I have to get that in there. Let's be very clear. He
it's
will
true.
Find something to complain about. But
it's
go
true,
on.
But he's very stupid. So, like, the focus will have to change a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it is separating out FTR from Punk.
Which is quite funny, actually, when the Elite were like, okay, the way that we have the power is we cannot be divided. Like, it's all or one, baby. Elite fly together. And then for them to be like, but I'm looking over at you and I'm seeing that actually this would work really well on you.
Divide you very well, actually.
See that you're extremely divisible, actually. Yeah.
It's a master stroke. It potentially creates... Listen, if Dax and Punk have an extremely strong friendship, then this will not be a problem. And there will be no jealousy or frustration or anger issues. If they have a good relationship.
And you know what? I think they do. Because I think that Punk is the kind of guy who builds good relationships. He just values strong relationships based on trust, based on caring, based on really genuinely knowing other people. So
yeah, you can tell that because he's got a lot of people in his life that he's known for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's got a lot of long-time friends.
A lot of lasting friendships.
I think that's going to work out great. I can't wait. Well, we'll circle back on some of the other considerations to do with FTR and Punk. I can see, and so you think they would still have the tag titles and that Bucks would lose the rematch?
Which completely, at this point, the Young Bucks legacy is cemented as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
They are doing, and this, the contract to me, this is going to be the thing I will repeat repeatedly tonight. they're not doing anything they don't want to do. So yeah. If they want to put over FTR, let them put over FTR. The loss to the FTR, and again, this is part of why I'm a Bucks fan. The Bucks will give so much less of a shit losing to FTR than FTR would to them. Like, it will not, I can't see it bothering them that much. If they take the match and they agree to lose, then they don't care. The only question for me on this is then where does that leave Hangman? Like, Hangman deserves a big time singles match, and I don't know that there's anybody on the card right now that can give him that, or if you put him in another situation. So that to me is I suspect where, if there is any reluctance on the Bucks part, then that's where it is, because it's like, what's Hangman going to do?
Yeah. So. And that makes total sense to me. And I think it's like, I would be really bad for the Bucks, but I agree that I don't think that they would be mad about losing. And I'm like, and that makes them probably more well-adjusted people than me, because I would dig my heels in and I would be a monster probably. But that's why it's good that I'm not a professional wrestler, and I think they are better at professional wrestling than I would be. You'll be shocked to hear. Shall we move on to kind of the broader question of Dynamite episode 200? So this was, I think it, like last week when Dynamite aired, I feel like we didn't have much of a sense of what this show was going to look like at all. Am I right in that, or am I?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I did feel like when some stuff was announced throughout the week, but when we got that Bucks elite contract information in the morning, it was suddenly like, oh, am I excited about Dynamite episode 200? Am I thrilled to be there?
I believe I made a very snide comment to Sarah. It was like, oh, well, you know, the Bucks weren't allowed to be there for the anniversary show, but, you know, at least they can be there for this. And then it was like, as Wednesday went on, I was like, oh, no, this is genuinely going to be a celebration. This is cool as hell.
Yeah.
It was great. Like, there was just a sense of joy throughout the day. And I felt like you could see it on social media with the number of people within AEW who were like the fucking elite. Like,
the
video game posted like a snip. Like, they made all the video game elite characters and then put them in the ring and they made a snip and they were like, the elite are staying in AEW. Like, everybody was like, it's so happy. And it was just like, it felt like it infected the whole episode, to be honest. Like, it just felt like they were, you know, for something that you went into and you're like, oh, the card doesn't look that great. Like, you know, there's stuff on here that I'll enjoy, but I don't know that this is like going to be a killer episode. By the end of it, I was like, holy crap. This is phenomenal. Like, yeah, the vibes.
Yeah, the vibes were amazing. And I think, you know, I hadn't even really thought about it that much, but it probably was like pretty crazy to be backstage and to be like, things could be about to really change around here. And I have no idea. I'm sure that, and I keep saying the Bucks instead of the Elite, but it's because I love Mommy's Little Babies. But the Elite really like seemed to keep their shit on lock. Like, it's like, I'm sure that pretty much nobody knew what was going to happen. So it must have been, honestly, probably very bad news for some people, but for a lot of people, extremely relieving news that definitely you could feel in the energy of the show. Do you guys want to talk about like concrete stuff that they did for 200 that you liked?
Can you believe that Anne is gone for the episode in which the Tuttles returned?
I'm sorry, Anne. Finally, we make sense again and you're not here, but you're here in spirit. I see you there in the Zoom. Hi, Spirit Anne. We're so glad you're here. I loved seeing those tunnels again. I said, please don't take those away from me again, Tony. I actually really need those.
Sarah made fun of me because I kept aggressively turning to her and just being like, the tunnels are just better.
I like the big screens. I got to be honest with you. I like the tunnels, but I like the way that the look is. I thought the marriage of, it wasn't just the tunnels and the set. It was the lighting. Mm-hmm. The audience was lit up the way they were in 2019. Like, it just looked, I thought the camera work, for all the shit that the camera work has, and justifiably so, gotten lately, the camera work last night was great. I don't feel like they missed pretty much anything. Like, it was on point. I thought the graphics were great. The pre-tapes were great. Like, it just, again, there was that sense of enthusiasm throughout the whole show. And the look of the show was part of that, too.
Yeah. I agree that I love that they brought back the rainbow, whatever it is, smoke paintball. Or whatever, paintballs. Oh, sure. You know, it's kind of like the chalk dust. Yeah. I like they brought that back. I love that they did actual video packages being like looking back. That just felt really good, especially because it's something that has definitely been discussed a lot, is that they don't always make as big of a deal of things as they should. Like, it's like, you're the show. It's your job. You should tell us it's a big deal. And sometimes I might disagree, but I want you to act like we really matter. And I felt like they absolutely did that. Yeah. And I actually like, even though I've been stressed and I feel like everyone has been a little stressed about, like, are you guys going to start acting like you're doing all in? Like, are you going to start paying attention to the fact that you have this big show coming up? I kind of like that they were like, and it's the 200th episode, and we are starting to talk about all in, and all in matters, and we're making it a big deal. Mm-hmm. Even if it's not necessarily, you know, the way I or other people would have recommended doing it, I thought it worked really well, and it did feel like, oh, shit, things are starting to pop off right now.
Right.
Yeah. There was a lot that sort of started snowballing that you were kind of like, the only thing I would have said that I expected but didn't see was I expected a match set up or an angle set up for the Elite, but I can understand why they didn't if they're still up in the air as to what's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, it will be very interesting to see what happens with them. And I guess, well, I don't really know, because I know that they came to an agreement like a little bit ago, right?
I don't think it was that long ago.
It was pretty, okay, that's what I like to hear.
At most a couple of weeks. I don't think it was, you know, I do think it was before Blood and Guts. I think Kenny's conversation in Blood and Guts was a positive one, even though I did not take it as such at the time.
No, I was stressed at the time, but I think that the fact that the timing of All In overlapped with this period of uncertainty has not been amazing for doing a good build for them, which sucks, but I think that it's like they're going to make the best of whatever they end up doing. It's going to be great. So,
yeah.
Do you have any other kind of like broad thoughts about stuff that felt good in the show? I think both of you said something about this. She said vaguely.
I think for me it was, and some of this is just very personal preference stuff, like I felt like the people that the show focused on last night were the people I cared about. Mm-hmm. And people who have gotten less focus and less time over the last year or so. Yeah. I think, you know, other people have brought this up, but I do think that pretty much since Double or Nothing 2022, which is about a year and like 14, 15 months, it's felt like the show has made an active, the promotion made an active choice to be a heel, you know, that they were portraying themselves as the bad guy. And last summer especially, it just felt like a lot of my faves got pushed to the side. So new guys who were mostly ex-WWE guys or ex-NXT guys, some of whom I like,
could
come in and, you know, get pushed or get wins. And some of those guys I like a lot, and some of them are not happy and made it very clear they weren't happy and started fights and bitched about their booking and, you know, that's like not something I enjoyed and not something I can necessarily get away with. I think it's very easy sometimes for people to be like, oh, you don't have to care about the backstage stuff. Well, you kind of can't get away from it sometimes.
Yeah.
So,
and that's when they work it into stories.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So for me, last night felt like, oh, hey, remember that show you fell in love with? And remember the people you fell in love with? We're going to focus on them again. And I'm, you know, we'll talk about this, I think, a little bit more later. But, like, there's a point where it just, you get tired of seeing your faves lose. And you're like, why am I watching them? If the promotion doesn't care about them, why am I supposed to?
Yeah.
And also, I would say, like, the vibe was very much like everybody was happy to be there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, The other consequence of the show itself seeming kind of heelish is that, like, you know, there's a lot of talk about, like, people flying in, like, Tuesday night and leaving Thursday morning and being so eager to get out of there, and that, you know, the rumors about what the locker room is like and, you know, like, just this sense of, like, this is an obligation that they have to do and they're not excited about it. Like, I felt like we heard so much of that over the last, like, year or so. And so this, it felt like everybody who was at the show seemed really happy to be there. You know what I mean? Like, they wanted to be where they were. And it turns out that that's easier and more fun to watch.
It's nice. It's nice to watch people who seem like they're having a good time. And I like that you brought up, Sarah, like, obviously there are many people who came from WWE, NXT, whatever, who we like, but I feel like you can tell sometimes when there are people who came because they're like, well, this is the place to come now, but I want to do it. I want it to look the way that I want it to look. Like, I want it to look more like what I'm used to doing. And I like the people who came in and their vibe is like, I like what you guys are up to. I came here because I want to do the thing that you're doing that is cool. And that's, you know, I think that Tony, sometimes I've really been frustrated where I'm like, you don't know that you got to dance with the ones who brung you, but other people can come to the dance. It's cool when other people come to the dance. They just can't come and be like, turn off this music. We've got to change everything about this. We got to redo the decorations. No, the dance is ongoing. We are all dancing here together. You got to come and be ready to get in on what's happening.
Right. We'll share the music. Like, if you want to put on some of the songs from your playlist, that's great. But the whole concept of the dance needs to stay what it was. And that, I think, that was kind of lost a little bit for me. That, and it's one of those things you don't realize it's gone until you're like 6 months later and you're like, oh.
You're like, why do I feel kind of bummed that I'm about to watch Dynamite? Yeah. But I think, the vibes were great. We'll get into some of these specific storylines now. And let's keep pressing on. I feel like I sound unhappy right now and I'm not. I'm just like, wow, so much stuff that I like to talk about.
I know. The wealth, we have so many things.
It's a lot to talk about tonight. I'm always beside myself when you guys invite me, but when this stuff broke yesterday and then last night's show, I was like, oh my God, I've picked the
good week. It's really the exact week, yeah.
Anne was furious last night.
I know, I'm sorry, Anne. Okay, so to get into the storylines, we are going to start with MJF and Adam Cole in a storyline that, you know, I've heard it's giving me big Bloodline energy, guys. And that's inside baseball, baby.
There's about five people that are going
to
laugh their asses off.
MJF and Adam Cole fought FTR in Collision this week and lost. Dax pinned MJF. Absolute nonsense. Who gives a shit? During the match, MJF took a hit. It's a move. I don't remember the move. For Adam Cole. And after the loss, had a full mental breakdown where he was just like, I'm a failure. I suck. I'm so bad. Adam Cole's like gripping him by the shoulders, being like, I love you, man. Stop saying this stuff. Like, but clearly they both knew, like, you're in such a bad place. You are about to scorpion me. And MJF was like, I'm about to scorpion. And Adam Cole was like, I can see that for sure. So Adam Cole kind of backed away, went across the ring, turned around. And he said, do what you gotta do. So MJF standing there with the belt being like, I just want to hit this guy. Because I want to hit myself. Rich psychology. And and then he heard do what you got to do, and he threw the belt down, and they embraced on Collision, on AEW Collision.
On the no-nonsense show.
On the no-nonsense show. What'd you guys think about this?
Isn't it crazy that our whole podcast watched Collision?
I did only watch this match, but I believe we all watched varying amounts of Collision, and it is crazy. This is the first time we've tuned in.
I genuinely had to figure out what channel it was on. Is this a TBS or a TNT joint?
I wonder why their audience is older and male.
It's like, we got some info for you, Tony, on the numbers. The girlies don't like it, Tony.
Collision is not for the girlies.
No, opposite. Collision doesn't like the girlies.
No. We are manly men.
This was very interesting. I mean, just interesting from a lot of perspectives, but the crowd was 1,000% behind MJF and Adam Cole. They were booing FTR. I think because it's like people knew. They were like, we kind of think, I mean, I don't know. Maybe people thought that MJF and Adam Cole were going to win. I didn't think that Tony was going to give me joy, and he didn't in that moment. But you have
no. I think if it took place on Dynamite, I think people would have worked themselves into thinking that they were going to win, and it would have been like really bad. Like, I think like Dax would have been threatened for his life. But like, considering it was a Collision audience, I do think it was like people just really did not want MJF to turn on Adam Cole, and so like it felt like, after the win, everyone was just holding their breath and being like, please don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it.
I think, I mean, for me, looking at it from a meta perspective, I think the original plan was for MJF to turn on Adam Cole. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. That to me felt like that was the original natural story progression, was that they lost this match and MJF turns on him. So the fact that he didn't and it ended in the hug was to me the most shocking part of it. That Tony, I will wait until Chris Statlander returns a year from now. Khan has like moved away from his original booking is like the shock to tutti shocks for me. So that made me very happy.
Don't you think it's something about the fact that like the fans are united against this, but also Dave and Brian are united against it? Like,
yeah.
Like if it was just one or the other, I feel like Tony could persevere. But the fact that like he's got to fight both fronts, I don't think he can do it.
No, and I haven't stopped thinking for like more than 5 minutes at a time since our last episode about the mental image of the women of this podcast in the back of Tony's minivan with Brian and Dave, and all five of us are sobbing, being like, we want Grimace. We need MJF and Adam Cole. And Dave is being like, historically, if an angle is doing this well, you would never drop it like this.
They sold like 600 tickets or something like that. They sold last night. Now, I do think some of that was the Elite, but the walk-up for the show last night was insane. Like, they're actually starting to come to something that's hot. Yeah. And, like, for whatever reason, like, Adam Cole, for all that he is a face right now, he is still kind of a scumbag. Like, he still has those light scumbag vibes.
In this match, that moment where MJF was pretending to have that leg injury, there was a moment where, like, when he revealed that it was fake, the camera kind of cut to Adam Cole. And Adam Cole was not in any way, like, bad boy. He was like, fuck yeah, that's fucking awesome. Like, he was smirking.
Like, that to me is why, like, they just have great chemistry. And the combination of Adam Cole, who comes across as a babyface, is insanely sincere. Like, I understand the cheeseball factor to some degree, but he can say things to MJF like, I'm proud of you and I love you. And it comes across, I believe him. Right. Yeah. Like, I believe him.
Right.
And meanwhile, MJF, I don't trust a word that comes out of that guy's mouth.
But they're doing a balancing act right now where I'm like, I believe that you love each other, and I also believe that at any second you could be like, I turn around and I sting you, and I'd be like, yeah, because it's your nature. And it's so perfect to watch two people have that dynamic where you're like, I want to ride this forever, and you guys could turn on each other a million times and still always come back to like, oh, but I love you, buddy. I love you, and I'm really mad at you. Oh, you were bad, but I love you.
When they do eventually turn on each other, I would kill for like at least once a year they meet in like a battle royale or something, and they're just like, nah.
I want like someone else's pre-tape, and you see them having a drink together in the background.
Oh my god!
Yes. The next time they come to Boston, someone's like, "Oh, where's MJF?" And like someone just really conversationally is like, "Oh, I think he went to the Kowloon."
They meet at the Kowloon once a year on their anniversary. Whether they're talking or not, that's just their special thing.
It's a spicy drink and a couple of Mai Tais, and that's their anniversary.
Yeah. I mean, I think that they're bringing the most out of each other. It's pretty crazy now to think about how, I mean, I knew at the time I didn't like Adam Cole's first face angle with Jericho, and like somehow it just wasn't working for either of them in a way where it's like, you're both very entertaining men and you're bringing out nothing in each other. It's just flat. And MJF and Adam Cole are bringing out everything in each other. Everything. You're just like, wow, it's electric. You seem scummier, but also nicer. Like somehow it's both at the same time.
Because they're making each other, like MJF is making Adam Cole worse and Adam Cole is making MJF better. And somehow they're both like hanging out in the middle.
Yes.
It's great.
Yes.
Okay, so then on Dynamite, MJF cut a promo in which he talked about his experiences being bullied as a kid, the fact that he then became a bully as an adult, and the importance of being vulnerable. I think my jaw, like, dropped. Like, I was like, they're saying it out loud. They're saying it out loud on TV. That's what this is all about.
I genuinely was like, this is a public service, like, that he's doing. Men need to hear this. Men don't have to hear this.
They don't want to hear it, but they have to hear it. I honestly, that's completely right, is that it was a PSA where it's like, men, you think you can get away with never being vulnerable, but I'm telling you, you can't. And so he came to this conclusion. He says, I'm still a scumbag, but I can be your scumbag to the crowd, which is a good, I think that lands in a really good place for MJF for what is going on with him in terms of crowd reaction right now. He called Adam Cole out to the ring. They had a very vulnerable talk about their friendship. They dug into the importance of male intimacy. Adam Cole saying, I'm proud of you. Like, you deserve all good things. MJF said that he promised Adam Cole a match for the belt, but Adam Cole doesn't deserve a match. Adam Cole looks shocked. He deserves the best match. They will fight at All In. We got a little, I thought this was a perfect little taste. MJF saying, of course, I will win the match. And Adam Cole's just like, haha, we'll see. And then they're both just getting up to play to the audience. And then we cut backstage. Roderick Strong is having a full, as I've written here, primal scream Carrie Underwood break. Just full before you cheat, just smashing things. He's in his neck break. He's having the worst day of his life. I had said earlier in the segment, I just know Roderick Strong is suicidal right now. He was. And cut to the Kingdom come on screen. And say something that I don't remember that clearly is like, don't you just want to be a bad guy now? And Roderick Strong looks like, I actually want to be dead now, but sure. Yeah, bad guy works too.
His misery was so good. Like, I just, the comedy of the cut, like, I don't think it was direct. Was it after a commercial or something?
It
like,
was the hug.
Was it directly from the hug? I think yes. It was a commercial. No.
I think it was before the commercial, yeah.
For some reason, I thought it was like a little bit of like, I just wasn't expecting it. And they cut to him and I was like screaming with laughter the second I saw him starting to smash things.
It was amazing. It was just, like they both just seemed to be really enjoying themselves and they were so excited to hug each other. And then the Kingdom showing up was perfect. Like all of this is just.
And when Adam Cole or when MJF was like, you don't deserve a match. You deserve the match. Adam Cole's face. It was like a sunrise, like came over him. You know what I mean? Like he went from like looking like, sad and a little worried to like it was just like dawn broke, like he was just like the happiest, like me, really, All In, really, really, Max, like it was perfect. It was just so good.
I also really liked the part where Adam Cole was like, I'm learning how to be a good guy and it's a hard road. And I was like, thank you. This is a yes. Meta comment, a storyline comment. Adam Cole has only just turned face.
Yes,
like he was a bastard when he showed up. He was a fucking asshole. Like, yeah. Like, you know, this, that was, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Cause I feel like we were begging for that months ago when he face turned, we were like, we're happy to go there with you, but I'd love to see you be like, I know I've been bad, but I want to be good. And this was, I feel like the first time we got it. And I agree. It was great. And this was a great context, like to be bringing that note out. I do think we could have set that up a while ago, but we didn't, and that's okay. We press forward. Okay. So a lot of people loving this storyline, ourselves included, as you can tell. Some people not loving it as much. Do we want to talk about what might be going on there? Why do some love and some not love?
The men are struggling. And like, this is one of these things where I'm going to make like extreme generalizations that are not 100. Like, obviously, when I say the men, like, you can be a dude and dislike this, and it's not because you have, you know, internalized issues with vulnerability and emotional intimacy. But I do think that there's something about it ties into part of the reason why some people are so pissed off about the Elite is because this is a wrestling show and that they want their wrestling show, which they, I suspect there are a bunch of dudes in their 30s who took a lot of shit about liking wrestling in high school. It's gay, you know, and they don't know, like now they're like, these are men hugging. It's gay.
Maybe so. There's nothing wrong with that.
But like, it's so much easier to get behind someone like CM Punk, who's like a tough guy asshole who tells it like it is and just wants the belt because he's the best in the world, as opposed to two guys who are like, I'm really struggling with my ADD and my, you know, like that's like if you are someone who is in any way like ashamed of your like wrestling fandom or like your you know what I mean? Like if you've convinced yourself and everyone around you that like, you know, Ishii versus Okada is like the height of your, you know, New Japan, I care about it because of what's in the ring, then this kind of stuff has got to be like fucking terrifying, right? And the idea that people are liking it has to be terrifying. And that to me, I think is, you know, there's a reason why the women are flocking to this storyline. That the and it's statistic, like the female demo last night was way the hell up. The female demo for Collision was way the hell up. Like, they're watching this show for this stuff because this is something that girls can fucking it's for the girlies. We can relate to it. Like, it's a first flush of a new friendship and she's kind of a bitch, but I still love her and it's a lot of fun. Like, you know, like, it's we went out for Mai Tais and talked shit all night about our coworkers. Like,
right.
And I that to me is one of those things where I also feel like part of it is that if you are used to the WWE model that you hate, which is the storyline and the stuff occurring in the background is more important than the actual wrestling, right? The bullshit that happens backstage, the matches don't lead to anything, they're 3 minutes long, they don't make a lot of sense, and you're someone who cares about AEW's booking, which is logical and progresses, then this has sort of scared the shit out of you because the natural endpoint of this does not seem to be a match, right? Mm-hmm. And I think because it's been up in the air, because they have changed the booking last minute, this was progressing in a natural linear way. MJF was going to turn on Adam Cole. They were going to have the match at All In. Somebody's going to win or lose, yada, yada, yada. Now it's kind of like, well, what are we doing this for? The audience seems to just want vignettes of them hanging out and hugging, which is not double clothesline, but that's not a lot of wrestling. So, like, I can understand where that would be something that if you're here just because you like the grappling, then that's kind of like, you know, this isn't my idea of a good time. This is the bloodline, right? But, like, I think this is something that AEW needs more of. And I think Tony Khan, when he does his booking, relies way too much on previous history of shit happening and leans on that as a crutch, right? Like, you know, you don't have to give the Lucha Brothers and Best Friends a storyline for a feud, because if you've been paying attention, they fucking hate each other and they have since 2019. But that's sometimes you're like, hey, it would be nice if we did have a reason for a feud, and he had to do that here. And so that's why we've gotten all the shit we've gotten. So I've talked about this for a very long time.
No, I think that's all spot on. And it is important to history is great. We love history. We love when you bring it in. But it is important, and you get rich new things out of sometimes being like, okay, these are two characters. We know what they're like. What happens if we put them in proximity? Like, what do they bring out in each other? And like we already said, like, that's the thing that is so exciting about this, is it's like, oh, I would never have thought that you should put these characters together. But when you do, you get much more interesting versions of both of them. It becomes a richer stew. It's the perpetual stew, as we said. So,
and it makes me crazy how people judge what's going on against WWE with no nuance, where it's like, oh, well, the bloodline did this, and the bloodline is bad for these reasons. And it's like, okay, well, AEW doesn't do that. You know what I mean? Like, there will be a match. Like, eventually, the match
will be a high-quality match.
Because they're really good wrestlers. And so, like, AEW is not going to suddenly turn into 90% vignettes just because you had to watch 2 minutes of, like, something you didn't like. Which, that is the male privilege shit that I do not care for, because it's yesterday, or the Dynamite episode, that ECW stuff with Jungle Boy, that wasn't for me. I don't really know what's going on there. I didn't care for it. I like seeing Jungle Boy, but it's not my interest. I wasn't on the fucking internet ringing a bell being like, hello, because hello? I had to see that. That means the world's ending. Like, you can not every segment has to be for you.
No, you know? And it's...
when you hit the point where 90% of Dynamite is not for you, yeah, that sucks. I spent all of 2022 like that.
Yeah.
But, like, just because Adam Cole and MJF are doing this now for short periods of time does not, like, it is not the end of AEW.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that is part of why it feels gendered to us, is that sometimes it is like, yeah, welcome to womanhood. Most stuff is not made for you, and you have to find a way to enjoy it, or be like, okay, I'm going to ignore that because there's no way for me to enjoy it. But I'm very used to going through the world being like, that thing doesn't want me to be interested in it. Well, okay, I can find a way. I can find a way. Life finds a way.
I think there's also more I think there's a degree of cheese and cornballness in a lot of what women like, you know, that we're just a little bit more comfortable with it in some ways than men are. And I do especially think that for male wrestling fans, they've got kind of a, I wouldn't be surprised if some of them are just triggered by any potential cornballness, because it does trigger back to that, like, I got made fun of for this when I was a fucking kid and I hated it. Like, you know, they made fun, and this is dumb. And again, there's also people that just don't like it. Legit fair.
Respect. And that's okay.
I'm not that bothered by people who are like, I didn't like that, so I wasn't paying attention.
Right. Yeah.
Versus that's fine. People who are like, I'm going to stop watching because of this one segment. We and you know what? They never stop watching.
They just keep complaining.
They actually continue to watch it. Okay. I think those are all really good points. Let's talk about, we're going to circle back on this conversation about what might happen at All In. So we have MJF and Adam Cole scheduled to fight. Do you have any thoughts about how that might shake out? Or are you just like, we're on the ride now, and we're going to have to find out when we get to the top?
Yeah.
I don't think they know.
No. No.
That's a little scary. That's the scariest thing I've heard yet, but I like it, kind of, because it means that there's a chance it could go good. I like that better than hearing it won't go good.
There's a famous main event from SummerSlam 92 that took place in Wembley Stadium, which was between Bret Hart and Davey Boy Smith, that was face versus face and ended with them hugging after the victory. So there's some conversation that it might be that type of a match, or they could do a callback to that. So we'll see. You know, I could do without Bret Hart references, but there you go.
I was about to say I've had enough, but actually I never clock any of them. Like, people just say, like, there were a ton of Bret Hart references, and I'm just like, oh, I didn't like it. I guess. But I think that probably the bigger conversation that everyone's kicking around is, like, what happens between MJF and Adam Cole at All In depends on what is going to happen with CM Punk as we approach the end of the summer. And there are these big questions of who is CM Punk ever going to fight again? He doesn't seem to have that many men to fight, I'm noticing. Kind of two men.
There are two people who he seems to want to wrestle, and then a bunch of people who don't want to wrestle him. And he's kind of like in his playroom, throwing his toys around and demanding people come in and play with him. And the people are like, hey, we're gonna hang out here while you have a temper tantrum in your playroom, and we're just going to ignore it, and the door will stay closed.
You know, and I was going to say, it's like, he doesn't even seem that interested in playing with the toys he has, because it's crazy how fast he burned through that Samoa Joe feud that everyone had assured me was such a big deal. It's so important that they're going to renew this famous rivalry. And it's like, that guy was basically like, it's like, they would be like, you're supposed to be doing a promo. I need you to look at the camera and do the promo, and be like, what? And then just be like, yeah, I'm going to fight Samoa Joe, so that's what's going to happen. And then just goes back to, like, checking Instagram. Like, okay. Do you want to be here?
It certainly did not seem consequential in any way.
No. What do you guys, do you have ideas about what you think is going to be happening with Punk at the end of the summer, how it might impact?
I know that everybody is saying this, so it's not like unique, but like, All In is a week before All Out. So
yeah.
MJF can't, like, it doesn't seem realistic that he's going to fly to London, fight at All In, then fly to Chicago and fight at All Out. Like, that's too much for any, like, anybody. Like, he's just
a boy.
Pay-per-view quality matches surrounded by jet lag. Like, I don't know. Like,
there's a bunch of people that are going to have to do that, though, Leah.
No, but like are there? Because
we've got that great cast of Collision. They can put on a pay-per-view all by themselves. They don't need any help.
That's it. Like, I'm like, are there going to be a lot of people who have to do that? Like, it seems to me that, like, you could have, like, two crews, because, like, maybe you could do that if they were both in the U.S. But, like,
Sarah's just shaking her head and being like, no.
I love you, but these are the same people that are doing this. Like,
that's fucking crazy. That doesn't seem good. I don't think that's what they should be doing.
I think... Realistically, if they have multiple crews for Collision, like technical crews and stage crews for Collision and Dynamite, which I suspect they do because it's a lot to ask anybody, they're going to need all of them for a show that is that big and is in front of 80,000 people at this point. I think Tony Khan, I think back to the first Grand Slam And the first Grand Slam was a 4+ hour show because Tony Khan, remember Eddie Kingston gave that thing, that backstage interview where he said, Tony is a good guy and he wants everybody to be in front of the largest crowd of people we've been in front of yet. This is an opportunity that a lot of these guys on the indie circuit, like you think about somebody like fucking Dustin, like has been his entire life. Is this the only opportunity he's going to have to do anything in front of 80,000 people? And there's a promotion of people that have that. Do you think Tony Khan is going to turn that down for a lot of these guys who have been with him since day one? That fucking show, he's putting everybody on it.
Dustin's going to be on the show, you think?
What if it's a BCC best friends match for All In? That would be fucking crazy.
I'd just puke all the way through. I wish you guys could see the face I just made as I processed what Sarah was saying.
It was iconic.
My boy.
It was iconic. I just think that you're going to end up with a lot of the same people wrestling on All Out that wrestled on All In. The danger is making the giant once-in-a-lifetime enormous show a feeder show for another fucking Chicago pay-per-view in the United Center, right? I mean,
it's crazy. Like when you put it, it's always been crazy and it's always seemed crazy. But when you put it that way, it's especially crazy where it's like, Tony, one of these shows is much bigger than the other. Like if one of them is going to feed the, but it's, you know, it is.
If Punk is going to be if Punk and MJF are going to fight it all out, then logically it does make sense for Cole and MJF to have their match and then Punk to show up at the end of it. But I can tell you right now, my entire body recoils.
I don't want that.
But then,
no, I don't want that either. Either.
Okay. Question A. What do you think about the fact that, can someone explain? So Punk has a bag, has a belt bag. So CM Punk has a beautiful bag of some sort, a Birkin perhaps. I don't know. I don't watch the show. And he has a belt in the bag. Now the belt, is that his original belt that he won?
Yes. It's so stupid. So this is the thing about this that I crack up about, right? Because, and again, I'm fucking biased. I can't stand the guy. I'm not interested in watching him. I think he's dumb. But if he was doing legitimate logical storytelling, I tell you that's what was happening, okay?
Yeah.
He brought this fucking belt out in the first episode, said something about, you know, no one has pinned me or submitted me, blah, 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 blah. Didn't show the belt, but the intimation was that that's what I was. Mm-hmm. In the last episode, he brought the belt out again, showed it again, and said, no one has pinned or submitted me for this belt. Hi. Remember Ricky Starks, who beat Punk like 2 weeks ago? Like, your whole fucking point just went in the garbage, buddy, because you did lose a match. Like, you lost a fucking match to Ricky Starks. So, like, you have been pinned and submitted. And if you're arguing that you're the linear champion because you were stripped of the belt, then
you're
Ricky
not
Starks,
anymore.
You're not anymore. Ricky Starks is the fucking linear champion. So it's just stupid and it's dumb. And he put a big X through it and he's like, oh, the X has been like my symbol because I'm the straight edge guy. And the audience is like, what? What? And like, they're not getting behind him. And then Ricky Starks came out and gave a heel promo that the audience cheered while CM Punk gave a face promo that the audience booed. Like, I have said this and other people smarter than me said it. And I have agreed with this for like over a year. CM Punk does not understand what baby faces mean to the AEW audience. He does not understand what an AEW fan, and I'm not talking about CM Punk AEW fans. I'm talking about people like us. I'm talking about other people who are like, I've been watching the show from the beginning. What do I as an AEW fan want? He doesn't get it. Like, no, we don't, you know. And so he's trying to do this thing about how like MJF is the illegitimate champion. Meanwhile, MJF's on the same fucking show paying no attention to this whatsoever.
Okay. So that's what I'm saying. That's what I was getting to is, what do we make of this? If we think that MJF and Punk are going to fight it all out, which seems certainly like a possibility, what do you make of this would be the program build. We should be in the build now that CM Punk it's like the ravings of a madman just out there being like, I'm writing on my belt because the X has always been my symbol. And that MJF, who he would be building the program with, is like, I do not see it. I pretend I do not.
And it would be one thing if like MJF was like, well, I was in Dynamite. I don't know what to tell you. He was in the building. Like, he was on that collision show and he still didn't pay any attention to it.
He paid No attention to it, has not made a comment on it, gave a whole fucking promo on Wednesday, never even mentioned it. Again, it is like a guy outside screaming into the wind and no one is hearing it except for like the six people on Collision. Like no one cares.
And a lot of men on the internet. Again, and a lot of men on the internet. Sorry to generalize about the men. Many of you we like very much. We like your opinions very much. But there are a lot of people who are like, this is storytelling. And it's like, this is something. I don't know what, but it's not storytelling. That is what is so crazy to me. And then the other thing that I was talking about with Leah earlier was just that, like, who do you think? So if MJF and Punk fight, you think Punk he's in with a chance to get this belt, you think?
So ideally you have two options, right? And the show appears to be, the promotion appears to be building towards a unification match where Punk and MJF fight each other and the winner walks away with the title, right? The other option is that you keep the real championship and that's the Collision championship that they fight over. Either of these is dumb as fuck as far as I'm concerned. The guy got stripped of his fucking championship because he had a little shit fit and hurt his arm and he was out for a year. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You're done, son. I don't think in my mind, and again, like I said, fucking biased, can't stand it. Beyond disliking him, I don't see why you would put a 45-year-old guy with a history of injuries as over the 25-year-old guy who the fucking audience is going berserk for right now.
Yes, especially when we already seem to be in a little bit of a dilemma where it's like, who is he going to fight?
Right.
Who is he going to fight?
No one, again, and this is talked about, and again, shout out to ONR, shout out to Brian and Dave, shout out to a lot of people, Wade Keller, who are like, Punk has a bunch of guys who want to work with, like, Joe Lanza said this pretty perfectly today. They don't want to work with you. I'm sorry they don't want to work with you, but they don't. You have to get over it. And that's kind of where we're at right now. The every other top guy in AEW does not want to work with CM Punk. And so and MJF, based on what he's been doing, does not appear to want to spend a lot of time thinking or talking about CM Punk. And so as a result, you know,
and why would he when it's like he stumbled into this program that has gone over like gangbusters? Like, I mean, why would he be like, no, it's really important to me that I get back to that CM Punk program with a guy that I can't really trust at this point?
This week, Punk felt very marginalized to me. You know, the Collision ratings coming out. The Collision ratings coming out and MJF and Adam Cole being the biggest quarter and like drawing the audience that they did was huge. The Dynamite 200 stuff where CM Punk was not mentioned at all. And when he was, it was like, I think Sue got more video, more moments in that video montage than Punk did. Like, shout out to Sue. Fucking love you. But you know, everything was focused on the Elite. Everything was focused on MJF and Cole. Like, they're, you know, the stuff about Collision, yes, people are talking about Punk, but most of the praise is going to FTR, and most of the praise is going to Bullet Club Gold. Like, they're the guys having the killer matches. Poor fucking Ricky Starks. Like, you know, he's going to lose again this week, and Punk's going to beat him, and it's just, like, at this point, I you know, and I don't look at this and say, oh, he's having great matches, but I could talk about this for a while. I personally am like fascinated in it in that Marie Kondo way now where I'm like, I love mess. Like, I want to see what is this man going to do? Cause I love mess. He's not going to impact my enjoyment of the promotion going forward because the Elite have resigned.
If we were having this conversation last week, I think I would have been much more stressed about all of it.
Absolutely.
But now I fully am also like, well, whatever happens, happens. You know what I mean? Like, now that I have that security that, like, whatever is going on with the Elite, like, they walked into it with their eyes open. I'm like, yeah, I'm at my leisure to watch this man self-destruct.
It's much more, it's like, I'm staying in a hotel and there's a conference room on the first floor. And every time I walk by, I'm like, what the hell is happening in there? So I just keep walking by because I'm like, I really can't figure, I think they're fighting, but I think they're supposed to maybe do a presentation later, but they're not aligned about it. And it is just like, I'm interested, but I agree that last week I would have been like, I'm terrified. I'm like, I guess we'll see. Interesting. Well, it's going to be an interesting month and a half as we approach All In, All Out, and then they head to Arthur Ashe. We'll see how that goes. All right, so let's talk about some other AEW original faves who got some airtime last night. We had Trent, Mox, and Penta in their three-way Anything Goes match on Dynamite. I'm like, every match Jon Moxley does is actually an Anything Goes. He doesn't, he's really never hemmed in.
I have a point about that later.
Oh, I can't wait to hear it. Trent won the match. Trent.
Trent question mark?
Trent question mark? Little Greggy won the match. Can you fucking believe it?
He won the big one.
He won. He says this is getting them on track. That's what Greg said.
The boys are back.
The match was very fun and bloody. We got table spots. We got all kinds of destroyers. We got thumbtacks. I liked when Trent and Penta briefly teamed up to take on Mox, and then immediately Penta kicked Trent. I was like, these are good dynamics. And they are those good, like, that's a good way to use history, actually, for me, is to be like, I don't like you, but yeah, I know you. So yeah, we'll just take this guy out, and then we can get on with beating each other up. Very fun. Greg won. Mox started choking him out. Yuta and Claudio were coming out also to choke him out, probably. They were attacked by Orange Cassidy and Chuck Taylor on their way to the ring. Fighting. Dustin got a live mic. They scared off the VCC. Dustin got a live mic. And he, on the live mic, he said, why don't you guys do another parking lot brawl with us on Rampage, which I believe was being filmed today and will air tomorrow. We got promo packages today from BCC and Best Friends. Yuta had this great line. He said he's going to dig Chuck and Trent a shared grave so they can hug each other forever.
In hell.
Yes. Dustin said that he likes doing big violence and a parking lot brawl is their match. Greg said they've had a lot of losses recently, but they are getting back on track. What'd you like?
All right. Let me recap. The recap for a second. One.
Yeah.
Greg won.
Yeah.
Two. Dustin spoke. Three. Follow up on a best friend's angle.
Wow.
For 18 months, we've said they'll never come back to this. And you know what? This time, we were wrong. I would like to look into the camera and say I was wrong.
It feels good to be wrong, but I just want to be clear.
So good.
They pulled the football away from us a lot of times.
Okay. It feels so good.
I said to Leah in the middle of the match, I was like, Trent really needs to win this. And Leah goes, yeah, but he's not gonna. And I was like, I know.
Yeah.
And then I was like, he won. And then there was a whole thing. And I was like, Dustin, microphone, Dustin.
Dustin,
and
microphone.
Like, what?
Greg won. Dustin, microphone. Match tomorrow.
The fact that Dustin got he didn't get bleeped on the fight stream that I was watching, but the fact that he got bleeped for saying sons of bitches, I would say one of the number one things that people say in wrestling.
I think Dan Lambert called me a bitch every week for 6 months.
I would believe it. I know that they rolled out, like, you know, the new, like, move guidelines and stuff, and it seemed clear that, like, part of working towards this TV deal maybe is, like, changing some stuff that they're putting on TV. I don't know. But it's like, I guess maybe they said no more bitch lines, but it's like, I think Ricky Starks and Action Andretti called me a bitch like a month ago. It wasn't a month ago, but it was fairly recent.
Jericho said fuck last night. He said, what the fuck, to Don Callis loudly.
They just got their eye on Dustin.
They got their eye on Dustin. This is what happens when you...
I mean, if they really wanted to do and honor the originals on the 200th episode, they wouldn't let him say shit.
They would let him say shit.
But maybe Dustin feels like he doesn't want to actually say it now. Like, it's been built up too much. He's like, I can never say it. I can never say it for real.
Yeah.
Which I would understand. Leah, what are your points about the hardcore matches?
Okay. So I have seen multiple times from multiple different sources that people are like, Mox always bleeds. It stops having a shock factor. There's too many hardcore matches. They stop having a shock factor. They're using too many like thumbtacks. Okay, then it lost the shock factor. It's still fun. Like, do you think that it's worse for seeing it as often as we do? I kind of don't. I'm like, yeah, in AEW, it sort of is like as common as a battle royale, but like, so what? Like, I don't think it's lessened my enjoyment of it. Do you guys feel like it's a problem that we see it that often? Because I kind of do not.
Not for me.
I don't care about it from a violence perspective. I think for me, I'm confused about the booking for this? Like, I'm sort of perplexed because logically you'd have a straight wrestling match, which would go to a grudge match, which would go to, like, you know, your more hardcore matches. But with this, we're going hardcore match to question mark, right? Like, I feel like a straight wrestling match at the end of this would be kind of a letdown.
That kind of makes me want a feud where, like, I don't know if Orange Cassidy would do it, but somebody being like, Mox, I challenge you to a match. And the stipulations on this match, you're not allowed to bleed. You're not allowed to use weapons. You can only do like light grappling.
It's going to be good old fashioned manly grabs. That's it.
You can't even bite my face.
You cannot bite my face. Biting.
Oh my God. You know what move we haven't seen for a while? We haven't seen back scratchy for a little minute.
Oh, back scratchy.
Oh, I miss it. All of a sudden I miss it. Little kissy and a back scratch. Yeah. What if maybe that's the final match.
What if he back scratchies Dustin?
Oh my God. Okay. Well, it'll be Dustin's shirt because Dustin won't take his shirt off.
Listen, we're getting everything else.
I love you, Dustin. I love your body.
What if he takes his shirt off?
Don't even get me started.
I can't think about that too much. Yeah. I'm too heated. Yeah, I would love that. Okay. What are we talking about?
I have to say the booking for this, I am like fucking fascinated by. My question for tomorrow night is who loses, right? Because this is Best Friends' signature match. It was built up as their signature match, both on the show and in the promo. So you don't want them losing their signature match, right? This is their five-star match. This is a thing that gets pointed to constantly as one of the best things about the pandemic era. On the flip side of that, are you pinning the Ring of Honor world champion? Are you pinning John Moxley? Like, is that how we're doing this? Or, you know, do you end up with something like the Lucha Brothers showing up and interfering, which would make logical sense if we're going to continue to treat this as a three-way feud, right? But realistically, it's kind of a challenge because the emotional center of this feud is not between, the Lucha Brothers are sort of on the periphery of the emotional of this. This feud emotionally is between BCC and Best Friends. It's technically over Yuta. They've been feuding since fucking March of 2022. So it's 18 months now they've been fighting over this. Mm-hmm. So like, that's one of those things that I'm kind of questioning. You're also hindered by Yuta's leg injury, which is still, you know, it's a questionable. You know, who are you pinning? Are we going with, my thought is you end up doing some kind of hardcore stipulation match at All In for like a three-way trios match, right? Or that leads to a Mox OC
with
singles
Dustin?
Match. Yeah. That leads to a
Dustin
Mox.
Dustin would be in that match?
Yes.
He'd be in All In. He'd be in All In. Not in the buy-in. Sarah, he'd not in the buy-in. He would be in the main. He'd be in the main.
Oh, cry.
That's my thought. And then that goes to a Mox OC singles match for All Out, right? Yeah, okay, but then the question is, do you have Mox beat Orange Cassidy? Does he become the international champion? Or do you have OC beat Mox? That's one of those ones where I fucking could see it going either way. And I'm intrigued by both of that. Do you want, if you have MJF with the belt and MJF doesn't wrestle, or the belt is going to collision and Punk is taking it, which would be a fucking nightmare scenario. But they basically, since MJF has gotten the main title, the international title has been treated as the title on Dynamite, right?
Yeah.
He defends it every week. It's out there all the time. So giving it to Mox in that way would elevate it like a little bit further. The flip side of that is I would love to see Mox lose to Orange Cassidy and spiral into breaking up the BCC, right? Like, that to me is a more interesting storyline, or Mox separating from the BCC. You could then turn that into a Mox versus Eddie thing, like Mox and Eddie versus Claudio and Danielson. Like, you have a lot of places you could go with that, right? That's kind of where I wanted to go. So that's my thought process. I think that either that or you do Pac versus Orange Cassidy versus Moxley at All In. But then are you pinning Pac like in his home country? That doesn't make a lot of sense either.
Okay, two thoughts. One is, so we have stuff fomenting in the BCC. You said, I believe, when you recapped some Ring of Honor stuff for us, that Claudio took a hit for Yuta.
Yes.
So now I thought that it was going to be a real division, that Mox is like, I tapped out for Yuta, and Claudio's like, I would never, because my boy has to be so strong. But Claudio, now they both have sacrificed for their child.
The fascinating dynamic between Danielson, Yuta, and Moxley with regard to Danielson, Mox, and Claudia with regard to Yuta is so fucking interesting to me. Because Danielson is the one who wanted Yuta in the BCC. But Mox is the one that he had to fight. And Claudio is his tag partner. And Claudio, like, is his, like, nurturing parent. And Moxley is his, like, tough-as-nails parent, right? Like, Claudio is the one who's, like, picking him up off the ground and being like, you're going to be okay. And Mox is the one who's, like, grabbing him by the head and yelling in his ear before his matches. Like it's – and Danielson is like, I don't have any children.
Well, he's the one taking him into the wilderness and –
making him do him there,
making him hurt himself, making him hurt himself.
I'm workshopping this in my head.
Yeah,
Claudio is cloth mother, and Mox is wire mother,
and Danielson is the scientist running the experiment, the scariest man of all.
Wow, we nailed it.
I think we did nail that one. Now, okay, and then this is a quick another thought. Okay, so we have this. Technically, it's a three-way feud. You're saying because we've got the Lucha Brothers in there. The Lucha Brothers having long history with the Best Friends and presumably some history with Mox that I certainly can't remember right now. But they got it right. No history.
Not really. The Lucha Brothers. So Pac and Moxley have history. Okay,
there you go.
But Lucha Brothers and Mox are.
And Pac still love Lucha. Lucha love Pac.
Oh, there's Death Triangle is like ride or die. Death Triangle is like Best Friends in the Elite in my mind in terms of like foundational factions of AEW where those guys will fucking never break up. Like ride or die, never break up. Like you are not separating Pac from Death Triangle. Like it's just not happening.
That makes me so happy. Well, okay, but here's the idea. To spite everybody, Lucha Brothers say, we will steal Yuta. And then suddenly, Yuta has two new dads in the mix and a new uncle in Pac. This kid is racking up dads like nobody's business.
He's like Darby.
The match eventually ends to one of those scenarios with like when a dog is being fought over where all the dads are in a corner going, come here, Yuta. Yuta. Come here, Yuta.
That TikTok trend where like the baby gets in front of the relatives and like has to go to the one he likes the most, and you just got like eight men being like, come here, son.
That's a free booking idea, Tony.
There you go.
Okay. Is there anything else we want to say about Best Friends?
I just love them. That promo today was so fucking beautiful. If you haven't seen this, please seek it out. It was on Twitter, it was on Instagram. Like it was beautiful. I loved that OC was nowhere to be seen or found. This was just Greg and Dustin doing what they do best, talking honestly, like, you know.
Greg called him a pervert. Come on. That's what I want to be hearing.
It reminded me of that one they did before Fyter Fest in 2020 where they were on the steps and
yeah.
Right? You know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
Like
yeah.
That one, it reminded me of that. And I was like, these are my fucking guys. Thank you. Tony Khan, you know, Kenny Omega, whoever the fuck said, push these guys. I don't care if they beat them. I don't care if they win. I want them to have TV time. I want them to have promos.
Oh my God. Actually, before we get off it, Sarah, you should say your thing about like the Best Friends getting beaten too often.
So this was my thing, right? So 2021, when they went back on the road, Dark Order was fucking over as hell. Right? Dark Order was so popular. And then Dark Order never won a fucking match. And they got relegated to Dark and they lost every time. And eventually Dark Order kind of just weren't over anymore. Right? Yeah. And I remember like going to All Out 21. Mm-hmm. Remember that, Leah? Like you were there, Allie.
Allie went too.
I
was there, yeah.
I had a total blank on that. But like, to me, Best Friends avoided that because they were with Orange Cassidy so often and Orange Cassidy did win his matches. And so as a result, you saw Best Friends as important. But over like the last 8 to 10 months, as OC has become the international champion and has separated himself or been separated from Best Friends, they have just gone out there and lost matches. And they are just very close to being guys that you're just like, and you could see this on Twitter. There was a funny tweet this morning where somebody was like, I hate this match. And the response was, I didn't even see it. And I know Trent took the pin. Like it was just too fucking, you have to give them wins for us to continue to care about them. And this is another thing that ties back to our earlier conversation about the vibes on Dynamite and the whole moving away from the AEW originals. Like these are the people that brought us in to the dance party and you have locked them in the bathroom and thrown feces on them.
Like, don't throw feces on my boys.
Let them take a shower, put some nice clothes on them, and bring them back out onto the dance floor. And I might stay and buy some more beer. Like,
why did you lock my boys in the bathroom and dump poop on them? Tony, why would you do that? No, it's true. And it's interesting with people like Dark Order and Best Friends. Like, I'm always so happy when Best Friends do something. And I, as a Best Friends fan, I'm like, oh, classic. They got the pin. And then I go on Twitter and I'm like, but everybody loves them. Yeah. Like, everybody does love them. And it's like, it is kind of like, don't squander that, Tony. You don't have to let them. You don't even have to let him win the big one. I mean, I would let him win the big one, but right. Like, you gotta show us that that you see their value, because they have a lot of value.
And yeah. If you don't show us that, we're not gonna believe it. And like, you could see that when the Guns won the tag titles. The Best Friends were the team that got brought up as, I can't believe the fucking Guns won the tag titles before Best Friends did. People were furious. And that's one of those things where it's like, this is the kind of stuff that, like I said, these are my favorite wrestlers and these are the people I care about seeing. And if you tell me they're not important, then why am I watching your show?
Right. Yeah.
And that doesn't mean, like you said, they don't have to be the fucking champions. You don't have to have them on the TV in the main event every night. But like, every couple of months, we need a decent program. That's all we're asking for. And that's...
Especially because every time you give them a decent program,
they hit it out of the fucking park. They hit it
out of the park. I was thinking when I was like, I can't believe we're getting this, like, this BCC feud. This is so fun. I was like, God, remember when they had that Young Bucks feud, which was in kind of a weird period? Was it like,
it was the Adam Cole? It was like December, January, 21, 22.
Yeah. And there was like, no, I don't even remember why they were fighting. There weren't any real stakes. And it's just like, oh, but these guys are such a blast to watch. They're like doing such a good job. And they all were just having so much fun.
That was criminal to me, because that was the New Year's show at Daily's Place at the end of 2021, right? Mm-hmm. It was right after Adam Cole had come in, and you had Red Dragon and Adam Cole beating Best Friends in the main event of that show. And I remember when Cody did that stupid fucking promo, but I'm like, he's right. You beat NXT with these guys. You shoved NXT to Tuesdays. And now you're taking the NXT guys that you beat and having them go over the guys who beat them. What the? This makes no fucking sense. Your audience wants these guys to win. So why are you beating them? It's one of those things that, like, I get it, but like, it's fucking infuriating to me as a fan of these people. I'm like, you know, they consistently hit it out of the park. The audience connection is there. Like,
but we've talked about this before on the podcast, is just like, when people are easy to work with and will always get a good reaction and will always, like, you know, do a good job, then it is easy to lean on them in a way where you stop thinking like, okay, how do I keep the energy up for them? Cause you're like, they're reliable. Right. I don't have to worry about them. Like, they're going to get a little pop. Like, and it's just like, well, it is, I hope that they never don't get a pop, but it's like, you do have to nurture, even if it's a hardy plant, you got to water it, Tone.
We've seen this with Darby, right? Darby was somebody that Tony could beat. He's like Orange Cassidy in that way. They're perennial over baby faces that the audience fucking is always behind. But there was a point with Darby where he beat him too much. And he lost a little bit of that. You couldn't just bring him out with Sting and the audience would go nuts. And you had to get that back again. And this is where, like, there's value in losing, as we can fucking see from the fact that nobody wants to on Collision. But, like, you know, this is why Swerve is so valuable. Swerve's like, fucking beat me. Not a problem. You need me to go out there and give you a solid 25 minutes with Tanahashi? I will lose. Not a big deal at all. You need me to go out there and make Nick Wayne look like $1 million? I'll lose that feud eventually. That's valuable to a promoter. Like, but there is a point at which if you beat these guys too much, the audience just stops caring about them. And he's on the verge of that with Best Friends, which is why I said Trent needed that fucking win last night so badly.
Yeah. And why it matters how this parking lot brawl goes, for sure. But we will find out tomorrow. And I can't wait.
Oh,
let's talk about the big, exciting climax of Dynamite last night. The main event, Shida versus Toni Storm for the Women's World Championship. And Shida won. Shida won the belt, baby.
Shida won the belt. There was a moment where I was like, they just kept talking about how it was the main event. And I just was like, Sarah, what do you think the chances are Shida's going to win the belt? And Sarah, you gave me a little bit of nothing. You were like, I don't know. know. And I was like, I kind of think like it's a special night. Like there's magic in the air. Like,
I believe you did say, isn't there a little feeling in the air?
I was low key chilling on you at this point because I had gotten a spoiler report from somebody who was there who said, it looks like they're moving confetti cannons into place. And so I was kind of like, oh, I can't tell her that I...
Oh, that's why I got the reaction, because she stonewalled me. She was like, you little idiot. And I was like, well, I think I'm right.
You were right. I didn't want to spoil you. I was like, if I hint at this, she's going to be big fucking mad at me.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad. I'm glad we're finding that out together now.
This was so exciting. So I've said here, not in a bad way, it was a fairly straightforward match, not a lot to recap. It was good, felt tough, like they were going at it. It was great. The only pertinent stuff I had in terms of like any type of storyline, which we'll talk about, was that Soraya. That how you say her name. Soraya and Ruby Soho were ringside, trying to interfere. Soraya slid Sheeta's kendo stick into the ring. I guess she was hoping that Sheeta would hit Tony with the kendo stick and get like disqualified, but she didn't do that because she's not a fucking moron. So she just hit Ruby on the head and then won. Then she won the match. What are our... it's hard to know what the best first question is here, because I think we're all excited that Sheeta won. We're excited that Sheeta, our pandemic champ, she's going to get to be the champ, presumably, at Wembley. That fucking rocks. What do you think about what this could mean for the women's division? Like, what's happening here? Do you know what I mean? What's happening here?
I don't have a lot of thoughts about this. I do feel like this is a repercussion of Jamie Hayter's gone for a long time. Like,
yeah,
a long, long time. And they're trying to come up with, like, we need a baby face that the audience can get behind. And that's not Britt, right?
Yeah.
What their plans are or were for Wembley, what they decided to do, I don't know. This was a wonderful fucking moment. And it could have been built up a little bit more. Like, Sheeta's been quietly racking up wins, but for the most part, like, this was great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, Eric Beeston seemed to think that this might be the end of the Outcasts, which I would not be sorry about.
Sorry to this face. Like, it was really like, yo, we'll never see the last of them. Those little pests.
I don't know. Like, this is one of those things where, like, if you separate out the amount of money Soraya is making from what she's actually been able to do, like, I'm fine. Like, I give her credit. She turned it around, right? Like, she came in, it was a mess. She was tone deaf. She didn't know what she was doing. The heel turn and her becoming, like, she's phenomenal on the outside. When she's on the outside screaming shit, like, she's great. Like, her promos are good, but, like, I don't know that they're paying her millions of dollars to do that, right? Like, the wrestling is not there. She's clearly not capable of carrying a singles match by herself. Like,
yeah.
I think it invigorated Ruby a lot. I don't know that it did a lot for Toni Storm, but I also am kind of like, you know, the women's division needs different storylines and more time. And part of the problem is, again, they suffer the most from Toni deciding that he's never going to switch tracks. Like, he's never going to do anything different, right? Like, he's going to stick with his plan. The women's division suffers from all of Tony's Khan's booking problems and booking issues are magnified in the women's division. Nothing's happening there that isn't happening with the men. There's just a lot more men and a lot more time. So it's hidden because it's not.
Well, that the thing that just occurred to me that I was like, is this anything? Is that it is a huge problem for the women that they only have one match a show, basically, and that they get so much less time, obviously. But what that means, and I think we should give them more time, and I think we should give them more matches. So I want to be clear about that. But if you're not going to, you need to change the pacing of their storylines.
Correct.
You need to take that into account and say, okay, so when, like, the women's storylines, it is going to be like you tune into a Looney Tunes segment. Yeah. And
two months.
It's fast and you're cramming a lot into each one. And there's going to be more movement than you would do with the men, where you're filling a lot more time with the men.
Yeah.
Again, I don't think that is an ideal situation. But I think if you're trying to work intelligently with the parameters that you have for whatever reason right now, that is the thing that you need to keep in mind, is we cannot be watching one match a week where the same thing happens over and over again.
Yep.
You need to give us something new, but tell us authoritatively, this is part of the storyline. It is related, and we're getting a new angle of the storyline. I don't think that's a very easy thing to do necessarily, but to me, I'm like, that's your only option, because you can't continue to be mired in stuff like the Outcast storyline, where I think we had a lot of hope for it at the beginning, because we were like, you've gotten a lot of people involved. You can have those personalities play off each other. You can have them like develop, you know, more nuanced relationships. And it just seemed like they were like, well, we're actually not going to do that. They're just going to have the same static relationships, and the same thing is going to happen every week. You can't do that.
It's frustrating because, like, you hear the same fucking thing, right? Like, send Anna Jay to Japan, and let's get Mercedes Monet, and let's get Athena back on Dynamite, and let's get somebody from Stardom. And it's like, again, at the end of the day, if the booking isn't there, it doesn't fucking matter what you do. Like, you're not going to, whoever you fucking bring in or whatever happens, if the booking isn't there and they don't have the time, and I don't even like, I'm not like, oh my God, are they only get one segment? Like, I think there are times where I'm like, yeah, one segment's fine. Like, it's not the end of the world, but you have three shows, right? So you should be doing three women's matches a week. You should not be struggling for that. And the biggest issue is that it's not organic, right?
Yeah.
The arbitrary box of you get one match a show limits the organic flow of the storyline, right? Yeah. And that's the hard part. And I get why it's difficult. It's hard to book a certain way for one division and a different way for the other. But there's a point at which it's like, Jesus fucking Christ, it's not working. And hasn't been working for a while. So why is there such a resistance to doing something different?
Right. Yeah. Right. And I would love it if we did something different now. I mean, I guess that is the thing that I don't, because of the booking of the women's division thus far, I have no sense of what we might get out of a Sheeta Champ storyline right now. I mean, I barely could report to you who I think Sheeta is aligned with right now. And in fact, I can't that confidently tell you who is a face and who is a heel among some of the women.
No, I know. But that, I think that's the key. So one of the things that when we were fantasy booking, when the Outcast first showed up, we were fantasy booking, like, what does this mean for the whole division? How many people can they rope into this?
Yes.
Like, and I still think if you are limited to one show, one match per show, then make it like, make everybody have to exist in the exact same universe.
Yeah.
Stop doing separate storylines. Like,
yeah.
If Anna Jay is friends with Ty Conti, then where is Penelope in that? Like, make her hang out with them too. And then, like, you know what I mean? Like, have segments where the backstage is like heels versus faces. You know what I mean? Like,
I agree.
There just shouldn't be any division between any girls' faction.
Right. Well, especially if you think about it as like, okay, we need to make a real push to get people invested in the women. You don't have to book it that way forever, but like, that could be a useful 6 months for you, is to be like, we are in the women's locker room and they have divided into two sides and they're playing red, blue camp game. And you know what I mean? Capture the flag. But like, you've got to capture
the camp game,
but we've got to capture the flag vibe. And it's like, and that's how we're getting the women in the mix. They can't all wrestle every week by a long shot, but you know who's aligned with who, and you're getting a sense of what the dynamics are, and you're getting a little bit of a chance to get that Adam Cole MJF thing of like, wait a second, I love it when those two interact. Right. That's actually so fun. Right. That should be a thing.
I'm just tired of the blame being placed on the individual women.
Yeah.
And the fucking Taya can't wrestle and Britt's regressed and this one isn't giving a promo and that one looks bad. Because like, this is, again, you bring fucking Athena in, everybody will turn on her. Mm-hmm. You bring Mercedes Moné in, everybody will turn on her. Like, there'll be some problem with what she did that somebody's going to be angry about, right? The issue is a structural.
Yeah.
The structure and the structural inefficiencies of the women's division.
Yeah, it's really hard for a woman in AEW to unqualified win. And I don't mean like, you know, belts or anything, but like,
no,
just succeed.
Right. Yeah. And that to me is what pisses me off about the conversation more than anything else, is that it's all focused on the individual wrestlers and this one has to go to stardom. And yeah, are there certain things that individual women wrestlers could do to improve? Sure. Am I certainly going to throw stones not knowing what the fuck is going on behind the scenes or why these people are going to have their own specific personal reasons why they are and are not doing these things?
Right. But it's like you get someone's manuscript to edit and it has huge structural issues. Like it's not helpful to be like, no. And you keep using an N dash instead of an M dash. Right. That doesn't matter at this stage. That's down the road. Like, right. We don't have time to talk about that right now.
Right? The plot is garbage. Yeah.
Right. It's like you're going back and forth between three different point of views without figuring out who you're talking as. Like, that's the problem. Yeah, I think that's right. I think none of us have any idea what will come of Sheeta in this role. But I know that I love watching Sheeta wrestle. I would love to get a sustained push and to do some kind of storyline where we get to see Sheeta as a character, like, change and grow and do stuff. And I would love the same out of, I literally was writing this and I was like, and Chris also is our champion. We see her not that much, but I believe she is wrestling on Collision this week.
I think she's been on Collision multiple weeks. So
with your brass city bitch.
I can't watch you there, Chris. Don't go where I can't follow, Chris. we obviously are very over time, which we agreed that we would be. Do you guys want to talk about both of these topics or do you want to choose just one?
I would guess Swerve. What do you think, Sarah?
Yeah. I mean, the JAS stuff is...
It continues apace. And I'm having a blast. I'm enjoying it.
It's good. Like, let's go. Like, I'm curious.
I also listened to the One Nation Radio podcast this week, and there was a point where Rich Latta was like, listen, when Jake Hager tearfully accepts the hat back from Chris Jericho, that'll be cinema. Never count out Chris Jericho.
Never count out Chris Jericho.
I would like to say that was the truest thing I've ever heard anyone hear. And, like, we should move on because we don't have to get into it, but never count out Chris Jericho. Never.
Chris Jericho ending up in a fucking match at Wembley with goddamn Will Ospreay.
Oh my God.
While CM Punk is going to feud with one of two people.
And I was going to say earlier, how do you think Chris Jericho's feeling right now? So smug, where he's like, and I extended the hand, did I not? Did I not offer him a program? And yet he refused.
Pushed it away, stupid motherfucker.
I mean, it's like, it's so rare in life to be that high on the high ground and to be like, I did exactly the right thing. And what can I say?
Again, like Leah said, Rich Latta said it repeatedly, do not count out Chris Jericho. Do not count the man out.
He's a cat. He's got 9 lives. I'm not even sure he's lost any of them. I think he might have all 9. Chris Jericho is Cresta Mancy. Is this anything? Are we?
Hey.
I think on that. Okay, let's talk about what's going on with the Seattle crew. So this week, we had a little promo with Swerve and AR Fox. Was this all in the video package or was there?
Yes.
Yeah, it was all in the video package. So they're hanging out and they're like, let's go check out Buddy Wayne's Wrestling Academy. And Swerve and AR Fox clearly have been bonding over the fact that it's like they both feel pretty dicked over by Darby. Swerve is advocating for AR Fox. They're ex-boyfriends who have fully unionized. And he's like, man, we got to talk to that guy about how he treated you. It's not right. So they go to Buddy Wayne's Wrestling Academy. They beat up Nick Wayne. Bad, really bloody bad. They do some classic wrestling.
I was shocked by it. I was like,
I know.
Nick Wayne is like, he's 18 already. They let him blade. He's
his mom. How is his mother allowing this?
He was just born.
His mother, Darby. Darby, you look what happened to your boy. They did a little classic wrestling grief stuff where it's like they're trash talking Buddy Wayne. I love. Every time you re-encounter the fact that it's like people in wrestling are just processing their emotions so differently to you and me, but I love it for them. And then we got a little bit of this was kind of like a Kenny look at the screen bitch moment where you're just like, it's moving, but it's funny. But it's very funny because they'd beaten Nick Wayne up so badly, but then they had to make him sign into his iPhone and dial Darby's number.
I wonder how much of that is improvised. Like, did they, because they held the phone up to his face and then
Swerve, and it wouldn't.
press the passcode. And it wasn't because that Nick Wayne was bleeding so much that Face ID wouldn't recognize him, so they had to improvise.
Well, I don't know, but I'm like, why wouldn't you just already have Darby on the call and yeah. then just pretend? Just make it. I just play pretend. It's not right, real.
Because surely they were like, not actually, like, I mean, I think they actually did call him, but like, did it matter that they actually called him?
No, but also imagine if he'd logged in with the face and then they did tell Siri to call.
I always loved the stupid BTE bit where they're like making a phone call and then they pull the phone away from their ear and like it cuts to like the fact that it's like the calculator app.
Oh man. Okay, so they did call Darby, and this was so funny to me that it was sort of being like, Darby, how could you treat AR Fox like that? Like, it's just two ex-boyfriends who've gotten wasted together and are being like, he never appreciated you. No, man, he never appreciated you.
It was fully like, oh, so he slept with you and then he didn't call you the next morning? That's fucked up.
That's fucked up. You don't deserve that, man. You're a good guy.
Swerve doing in one pre-tape what Malachi Black could not accomplish in 18 fucking months. True. Like, I'm sorry, but like, true. Swerve is terrifying in the yeah. best ways.
He's truly, like, I honest to God think if you count up the amount of fucked up things that have happened in AEW, people would think it's BCC, but it's almost all Swerve.
It's Swerve! It's Swerve, and I just fucking love it. And I love the fact that we've had three pre-tapes and the Buddy Wayne Academy is already a foundational location in AEW.
I know. It's up, right up there.
Oh, no, they're at the Buddy Wayne Academy!
I know it's like we've never been there, but it's right up there with the Stu Hart dungeon for me, where I'm like, I know that place. Someone should do this would be a great art, okay? Someone should do an art map of famous wrestling locations, but it is just places like the Buddy Wayne Academy, Stu Hart's dungeon, just
Matt Hardy's compound.
Matt Hardy's compound.
Chris Jericho's hot tub.
I think I was about to be like, yeah, in Chris Jericho's steakhouse. And then I was like, he doesn't own one, but we just say he does a lot.
Mentally, I'm like, Chris Jericho's always at a steakhouse. Just belongs there.
He just owns a Ruth's Chris. Okay. What was I going to say, you guys?
I don't know.
Oh, just that Swerve is such a great heel because it's like, he's so charismatic and so scary. And you want to, like, you're like, boo, that's really bad. And it's not play pretend, like, oh, I'm booing you. But also, it's so fun to boo him. But you are like, but I'm booing you because that's really bad behavior. It's great. He's the whole package. He's perfect.
And he's so fucking hot. Like, we're not talking about it enough.
He's very hot.
It's pretty sick how hunky that guy is. Yeah.
His workout videos are iconic.
I haven't. My eyes just went like, I don't think I've seen the Oscar size of the moon. Finding these?
Oh, he posts them to Twitter. Ooh. He's doing his like personal record like pumps, and they're just real good.
Check out some pumps after this for sure.
I believe that I'll be looking into that the moment we hang up.
Yeah, we got to wrap this up real quick because I gotta go look at those pumps. Do you guys have any thoughts just overall about how this Seattle complicated kind of like polyamorous love nest storyline is working for you?
I hope that they stretch like the Nick Wayne part of it like a very long time. Like, I don't think he should beat Swerve for like a couple years.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree with that. I feel like the fact that Darby has Sting and now Darby's the Sting to Nick Wayne is really great.
Babies having babies.
I know.
Babies.
I just like that a lot. And I just think that, like, I don't know. When you talked about people coming into AEW that we are just like taken to, Swerve is that for me.
Yes,
like Swerve is like Adam Cole, where I'm like, I can't imagine him not being there.
Yeah.
Like he has hit it out of the park. I am like just a huge fan. I'm like, whatever this guy wants to do, I am fucking on board.
And I think, like, they mistreated him for a couple months there and they're getting back on track.
I don't know that they mistreated him. I think Swerve cares very much about his presentation, and I think he had an idea for his presentation, and he he tried to work with what he had and it didn't work out. And so he's gone to something else. I think Prince Nana is fantastic for him.
Like, right. Yes.
I love it. Like, Swerve doesn't need a manager, but right. Prince Nana is just like, yeah. Like, and I went to a Ring of Honor pay-per-view and Prince Nana was ringside and the guy is fucking unbelievable. Like, never shuts it down. Like, and I think that AR Fox is way better than,
Trench.
Well, and even Brian Cage and
oh, yeah.
Gates of Agony of Trench. Jesus Christ. I've heard, like, that was a fever. Listen, sometimes you got to try shit and sometimes it doesn't work. Like,
I appreciate with Swerve that he tried it and he was able to say, which I feel like sometimes people aren't in wrestling. He was able to say, I think there are parts of that worked and parts that didn't. And right. I want to keep some parts and change some parts. And right. I think sometimes in wrestling, you get a little bit of a vibe. They're like, well, that didn't work. Throw the whole thing out. And it's like, but you could, I think some of it was good. Like, it's okay to iterate a little.
I think Swerve has been great at looking around and going, what's an underutilized resource mm-hmm. here? Like,
yes.
personnel wise, right?
Yeah.
Brian Cage and Gates of Agony were an underutilized resource, right? You know,
and Brian Cage was born to be just background meat.
He was. So
it's a great role like, for him.
Sorry, Brian Cage, but you were born to stand in the background and look menacing. No. And AR Fox is like, AR Fox has a ton of charisma, but was yes. being underutilized. And so yes. putting him with Swerve is freaking fantastic. And if yeah. that pre-tape is anything to go by, like, they set all of that up last week phenomenally. Like, everything about it is great. Like, Swerve, like I said, he's someone who cares about his presentation, but he's not married to it. He'll change it up. Mm-hmm. It's not working. And I just, he is my favorite of probably anybody that they've brought in. Him and Kylo yeah. are like right
up I was there. About to say, never forget. I know he's not never with forget us right my now. Kylo, you'll be back someday, baby. I love you so much. I miss you every day. But yes, I agree. Very, very high up there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was going to say that also that I think this, what they're doing with like all these guys who have fought on the indies and know each other, this is a good blend of the history matters, yep. but also we're bringing new stuff to the table. We're creating new relationships.
Yep.
So it's not just being like, they have history, therefore you should care. We are being given reasons to care. And I feel like they're working. Like, I'm just like, yeah, I'm interested in this. I want to see where all this goes.
Right. Nobody is as good as Darby at bringing in independent feuds and making them feel like they are foundational AEW feuds, right?
Yeah.
Like, I say that, like, you know, even the Elite are not as good at that as Darby is. Like, Darby tells you that Ethan Page and him have a relationship, and you're like, yeah, you do.
Well, I was just going to say, like, the fact that Ethan Page feud has had such impact on us that we still bring it up to this day. Come on.
Yep.
To the extent that I know that it's like Ethan Page came in, we were well into wrestling at that point, but in my brain, I'm like, yeah, Ethan Page, an AEW original, pretty much, because he had that amazing feud with Darby. He came in and was just like, I'm fucking all in, baby.
Yeah.
And they went for it. Yeah. So I agree. I think Darby is great at being like, I'm going to use it, what already exists, but it's just not going to stop there. We're going to build a new chapter.
Right. Right, right. Like, this is the start and not the end point. And, like, I'm going to... And I also think they've done a really good job with the Darby feuds in terms of, like, bringing us into them. Like, they've shown us, not told us. And that's really important.
Yeah. Man. It feels really great to have had this whole conversation. And we just talked about so much stuff we like. And we had a little aside in the middle where I enjoyed talking about some stuff that I might not like, but not it wouldn't end my world. Feels good.
Loving everything means that, like, the CM Punk stuff, like I said, it's like, I love mess. Like, the rest of the house is beautiful and, like, clean. So I'll go into the guest room, which is covered in shit, and I'll have a lot of fun cleaning it out. Like, you know what I mean? Like, whatever Punk's going to do is just going to be like, look at this fucking weirdo.
I did just think
I'm
that
there
I'm
like, now.
I'm like, is this how Punk gets female viewers? Is he becomes the kind of like Housewives franchise of AEW where you're like, what is going to be going down there this week?
He is the Ramona Singer.
That's how they get those Vanderpump viewers back. Oh my God. Sorry, Lee, I think I cut you off. What were you saying?
No. I don't even remember.
We had too much fun. Now we don't know what we're talking about anymore.
We're like, and we're so over time. It's crazy.
Sorry.
No, but you know, I could not
be
happier.
We've said many times, we're the shortest wrestling podcast in the biz. So
I Meltzered this podcast.
we knew it was going to go long because so much good stuff happened. And I think we deserved a long one after really walking through the desert.
For I always a deserve a long one.
Oh, on that note, I can't top it. On that note, I've been Allie.
I've been Leah. I left a space for Anne. I've been Leah.
I've been Sarah.
This is Tunnel Talk. Our show is produced by Marjorie Voinovich. Our theme is by Chris Corkin. You can find us on Twitter at Tunnel Talk Pod, Tumblr at Tunnel Talk Pod, via email, tunneltalkpod@gmail.com. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And come back next week. Hopefully we will be just this happy.